Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Olami 613 Chicago, without a live studio audience, but with music. Because we had a very meaningful Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, and the mourning period of the Jewish people over the temples that were destroyed is over. But we take it with us, and we are inspired to go forward and to do the acts of kindness, the acts of divine service that are required for us to build a Jewish people that is appropriate and fitting for the third temple, God willing. And what happens right after the 9th of Av is something called Tu B'Av. Now, many of you might have heard of something called Tu B'Shvat. So what's this two stuff? Well, it's not the English number one or two. It is actually the 15th of the month. Tu, meaning it's an acronym of the Hebrew letter Tet, which is the gematria, the numerical equivalent of 9, and Vav, which is 6. So Tu B'Shvat is the 15th of the month of Shvat, and Tu B'Av is the 15th of Av. And the question is, what happened on Tu B'Av? Well, the Gemara in Tainus, I know you're going to say, has like 10 or more answers of what happened there. And yes, they're all true. We'd like to focus on one of them to explain what this holiday is. It's under the radar, this holiday. How many people have heard of Tu B'Av? And we are going to use it as a platform to discuss true love. Yes, indeed, true love. What everyone is looking for. The secrets are found right here in Monday Motivation. They're actually found in the Torah. Because Hashem is our manufacturer. And he sent along with making us instructions about how to best use and how to best utilize our potential as human beings. And so before we get to what true love is, let's figure out a little bit over here about what happened on Tu B'Av, on the 15th of Av. And here we go. So on the 15th of Av, which is a time of reconciliation of God and the Jewish people, their vibes of reconciliation. 6 days later on Tu B'Av, it was the great day of shiduchim, of matches, where the young maidens would go down into the valley and the young men would go down to the valley, and they were given almost a divine inspiration to look deep into character, into things of lasting value, not just superficialities, not just good looks. And in fact, the maidens would switch dresses so that people wouldn't know who were the wealthy ones and who were not the wealthy ones. There was a sense of camaraderie that you had to look deeper than skin deep. And this was the great day of shiduchim, of matches. And they, thank God, would make matches. Now, I know many of our young professionals would love that. One day, get all of it done, you know? Don't have to struggle on dating apps. Don't have to struggle with all first dates, bad relationships. But this was the one of the special things why Tu B'Av is a holiday. The holiday where, because of God's reconciliation with the Jewish people, it led to a vibe, an energy in the air of reconciliation and of connection among young men and young women, and they would find their beshert on this day. Okay, so there we have it. That is one of the main reasons of Tu B'Av, one of the main reasons that's brought down why it is a holiday. And considering how difficult it is seemingly today for young people to find their matches, they certainly could attest that that is reason enough to make it a Jewish holiday. Now, turning to the topic of true love, I think the best way to start this topic from a Torah perspective is to look at what love is in the secular world, in the modern world. Yes, modernity has done great things for love. Actually, no. Modernity has killed love. They have butchered it. Absolutely. Sorry to say. You look at the divorce rates. You look at the carnage of all the relationships that are had, people dating for years and then breaking up, tearing each other's hearts out, and then having to start all over again. Oh my gosh, I could go on and on and on about this, but let's take a quick peek about the life cycle of a relationship in the secular world. Now, looks have a place. They really do. The Torah tells us that certain people were beautiful. And that definitely is a factor. There is no question. There needs to be an attraction between the couples. However, when you look at the average way that people meet, it's either today, it's on an app where they're swiping left, swiping right. Okay, there's a little bit of dark humor. Okay, it's like left or right in the camp. So left or right. No, okay, that's terrible. Okay, but in other words, it's like life or death. Either this relationship is going to make it or not. It's going to start. It's going to not going to start. But basically, you get the swipe left, the swipe right. I don't know which one is which. Thank God I haven't ever had to use those apps. And many times it's based on an extremely superficial glance at someone's looks. And this puts the women in particular at a disadvantage because many times it's the men who are basically categorizing who they want to go out with based on looks and not based on personality or depth or vision of family or life together. Okay. Now, another way that people meet, of course, is out at the bar, at the club. And what happens? Again, decisions are made on a very superficial level. Who looks good? Who is, you know, has a vivacious personality? Who is literally attractive, both physically and emotionally? Now, what happens with that? What happens is that a lot of people can be attractive physically. And emotionally, people who are absolutely wrong for us in every way, in every possible way. It's very easy to be attracted to a guy or to a girl. But let's just say, take a simple example. Let's say there's a guy and he wants to live in New York. He's visiting Chicago, but he just absolutely wants to live in New York. His family's in New York, wants to live in New York. And this girl absolutely wants to live in Chicago, and there's nothing to talk about. But what happens? So they meet in a bar, or they meet in a club, and they hit it off. And they, before you know it, things are getting hot and heavy. And they've already made a very intense physical, emotional connection. And they date for a few weeks, and then maybe for a few months. And then sometimes even 6 months, a year, before they even discuss their deal breakers. And this guy's deal breakers that he wants to live in New York. And this girl's deal breakers that she wants to live in Chicago. And so what happens? They've spent a year of their lives and then they, knowing that there's a deal breaker. Then the deal breaker comes up. They spend another 6 to 9 months or a year trying to figure out and make a compromise. And by the time 2 years are over, it's over. It's over. 2 years of investment. And if you think that I'm kidding you, we live in this area. We had a student once who we asked her, she was actually intermarrying. She was intermarrying a non-Jewish guy who had actually come to our Shabbat table and whatever. We have a very open table. And my wife asked her, so-and-so, what have you decided about the kids? How are you going to raise the kids? And she said, we haven't discussed it. They had been dating for 4 years and they were getting engaged and they're married now several years. So I don't know what happened with the kids, but they're dating for 4 years and they had not discussed what their plan for the kids was, how to raise them. In other words, the secular dating, puts all of the exciting, superficial ways to connect to another person up front, but all of the major deal breakers come later. And then that's when the ship hits the lighthouse, where it hits the iceberg. And then years of emotional and physical investment go down the tubes. It's actually one of the dumbest things in the world, the way that secular dating happens. It's just dumb. And the reason why I say it's dumb is because no one would do that in business. Who would do that in business? They'd say, oh, imagine going to a business fair. You're in real estate. You go to this real estate expo. Oh my gosh, look at that beautiful building. Look at those buildings. And you fall in love. And there it is. Oh my gosh, I've always wanted buildings like this. This is amazing. Let's go. Let's sign. Oh, how much is the deal? $100 million. Oh, I can get financing for that. You sign in the deal on the dotted line. 5-minute conversation, half an hour conversation, an hour conversation. You sign on the deal. $100 million. And then the next day you start teasing out the details. Well, where are these buildings? Australia. Australia? I don't want to own real estate in Australia. Well, you didn't ask. You just said they were pretty buildings. Like everyone knows that this is ridiculous. Any real estate deal goes through vetting and different layers and environmental tests and financing, and they check the property, and before any financing is approved, you go through the major issues. And even though you've fallen in love with the building, quote unquote, you don't move on anything until you do your due diligence. And if you would just fall in love with the building and sign a $100 million contract, that is called dumb. It is called unintelligent. It is called opening yourself up for losing $100 million and time and effort. And so if we would not do that in real estate or in any normal business transaction, then why should we do it for the most important area of our emotional and spiritual lives, called love, called finding one spouse, called building a family together? Why would we do that? And in fact, when you look at the Torah approach to dating, and then we'll do Torah approach to dating, and then we'll get to the Torah approach to love, is it's just the opposite. There is literally no meeting until the vetting happens. Each person, young, single person, has a resume, literally with references, with where they went to school, and who their friends are, and who their rabbis are, and who their family's friends are. And I've done this several times, is you call the references, then you find the people in their city, and you ask people who are not on the resume, and you find out their character, and you find out what their vision of their life is. And are they someone who wants to be a Talmudic scholar, which is great? Is it someone who wants to go into business and be a full-time business person? Okay, great. But it makes a big difference. And then what level of religiosity? And then are there character traits? Is there a kindness that runs through the family or not? Or maybe it runs to the family, but not through this particular person. And the vetting happens intensely, just like would happen with a first-round draft pick of the NFL or the NBA or the MLB. Everyone knows how much vetting goes through. Torah dating is the same thing, because everyone knows that if you want something really important, you need to do the due diligence first. Then the young couple, when both sides agree, go out on a date. And then dating becomes actually quite simple. Why? Because the only question is, are they attracted to each other? And do they get along? Why? Why are those the only two questions left? Because they already worked out everything else on paper lines up. Because the hard work was done before. So people ask, Rabbi, how could your daughters get engaged in under a month? I'll say, because they were perfect on paper, and the only question is if they were attracted to each other and if they got along, because we did the work first. All right, and that is why the traditional Orthodox way of dating seems old-fashioned, but boy, oh boy, thank God it's old-fashioned because it makes sense and it works. Now, next, true love. And this flows directly into what love is. Love is not infatuation. Love is not lust. Love is not exciting, superficial connections. Love is not infatuation. Love is not everything that Netflix and the movies will tell you it is. Love in Hebrew is based on the word ahava. Ahava, which is love. Now, people are saying, Rabbi, isn't that the Dead Sea Cosmetic Company? Yes, it is. But they called it ahava, love. But really, the source of love, rabbis explain, is the Hebrew word hav, which means to give. Those who know the liturgy of the prayers, havu l'Hashem ben elim, ascribe to Hashem, give to Hashem. Ahava, love is built through giving, through the pathway of giving. The more that I give of myself to another being, the more that I love that being. I literally invest my time, my blood, sweat, and tears into someone else, and I identify myself within that other person. This concept was developed most robustly by Rav Dessler, one of the great sages of the 20th century. And he explained that love is not experienced. Love is built. You love that or to whom one gives. And he says an unbelievable thing. He says, as much as children love their parents and they do and they rely on them, he says, parents will always love their children more. Why? Because they spent a lifetime of giving to them, of investing in them. And we see ourselves in our children because we invest in them. Another example I love to give is that if someone would give us a picture of a sunset, a beautiful picture of a sunset, it would be beautiful. It would mean a lot to us. However, if we would make that same picture with a 1,000-piece puzzle that took 4 months to put together, then there would be a certain satisfaction in that sunset more than the picture that was given to us because we invested, we gave of ourselves to creating that picture. And this applies in every aspect of life. Obviously, we said parents to children, but also our work. We should love our work, right? People are proud of their work. Why? Because they invest their time and effort and they should be proud of their work. And this is in every relationship that people want to cut corners, but there is no escaping that love is built through time and energy and effort. And this is particularly challenging in our world today of the phone and the social media and the distraction. But I know for myself, when I'm able to extricate myself from the phone, and be able to invest some time, energy with the loved ones, with friends, family. We had an amazing day today, just being together. That is where love, where true love not only is, but it's where it's built. True love is built through investment. And that is why there is never any shortcut to true love. True love is that feeling of ultimate connection, of two entities coming together as one, that feeling of almost bliss through years and years and years of giving. And so, as one of my rabbis used to say, it's a derech arukah shiktzara. It's the long shortcut. There is no shortcut to true love. True love is built with investments, small acts of kindness again and again and again, over days, over months, and over years. And so this Tu B'Av, I give everyone a blessing that we should identify the people in which we want to invest, that we want to invest our time, our energy and effort and be purposeful about it to build those bridges, those connections of true love. God bless. Have an amazing week. And we look forward to seeing you again right back here next week for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation.